The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
You're back, and I can't wait to welcome to our program our next guest. He is Gordon Whitener, who has been a football coach at the highest level, but in more recent years, he's become quite a sports entrepreneur in many, many different industries, and I don't even recognize Gordon without his cowboy hat.
Just for you, Paul. So.
Gordon, I'm trying to think about how to introduce you, but I really believe you're one of the most influential people in college athletics that, quite frankly, very few people have ever heard of, which I know is how you like it. But you are always behind the scenes, and the people that you surround yourself with. I'll leave off because I don't want to blow your cover. But thank you for making time. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you very much. You're very kind to say all those things. I'm not sure they're true, but nonetheless, I appreciate it. So,
well, it's pretty amazing some of the things that I've seen, some of the people I've seen you with, the circles that you travel. But that's not why we're here. We'll save that for another time. But I do want to talk about the industry. And let's go back to your coaching career. You coached 30 some odd years ago. You recruited Barry Sanders and others to Oklahoma State. And I want to start there because clearly what we're all talking about today is a little bit different than you knocking down the doors in Stillwater back in the 80s. So tell us about, let's start there for a second, about what it was like at that point in time.
You know, it really started. I mean, it's, the story's kind of crazy. I came to Tennessee initially as a college baseball player, signed out of high school to play here. They quickly made the determination that they'd made a catastrophic mistake, which was pretty well documented. And I had been a fairly decent high school football player and played with a couple of All-Americans who got highly recruited. So I met a lot of coaches and I always wanted to coach college football. So after I unceremoniously was cut from Tennessee baseball, I went over and worked all the way through school for Coach Majors and his staff, and which was a tremendous experience with not only working for Coach Majors, but all the people that you can imagine that came through in the early 80s through here from a coaching staff standpoint, was remarkable. And so, and great experience for me as a young guy wanting to coach. I followed Kevin Steele, a guy who you know well, to Oklahoma State. Kevin and I worked together here at Tennessee, and then he got me an interview at Oklahoma State, and I was hired there to help Houston Nutt coach the receivers at Oklahoma State, and I did that my first year, and then Oklahoma State ran into some trouble with the NCAA, and a guy got fired, and I was 22 years old, and Pat Jones, who was a head coach, he came down the hall and said, "Hey, you want to be the recruiting coordinator?" And it took me a very few seconds to say yes, and sort of the rest is history. That's how my start got it, in college football. So,
we could talk about a lot of things, but let me just concentrate on Barry Sanders for a second because many will argue he's the greatest running back in college football history. I'll leave that debate to others, but tell us a little bit about that experience.
That was an amazing, one of those just fantastic recruiting stories. Barry was an undersized, running back. He was the fourth running back we took that year, to put it out there, believe it or not. We took three guys ahead of – and we were on a roll at the time. We'd won 10 games. We were – we had a great young staff, as I said, with Kevin Steele and Houston Nutt, and Pat Jones was the head coach, and Larry Coker was the offensive coordinator. I mean, it was all those guys, have gone on to do great things. So we kind of had it going on. Now, so did Oklahoma down the road. But we were having some success, and we needed a kick returner badly. And our defensive line coach, George Wallstad, was a former Kansas JUCO coach, and he mined Kansas pretty well. And he went to North Wichita High School, and he saw Barry Sanders. He brought the tape back, and You know, Barry's the best kick returner to ever walk the planet. Most people wouldn't know that because you didn't see him in college, but he returned the opening kickoff his freshman and his sophomore year for a touchdown at Oklahoma State, and never started at tailback at Oklahoma State until the year he won the Heisman his junior year.
That's
because
amazing.
We had a guy who only played 13 years in the NFL and was in the Hall of Fame, Thurman Thomas, ahead of him. And the crazy thing about it is, in today's offenses, we would have had all these guys in the, you know, on the field at the time. But, you know, back in the 80s, as you remember, Paul, it was you ran the eye come kind of heck or high water. And so you had to have a fullback, and everybody was sort of, you know, kind of one thing until, you know, Jack Pardee was the only guy that probably ran anything different, you know, down in Houston.
Let me reintroduce Gordon Whitener to us. The stories are fascinating. We're only just getting started. So you eventually find your way into other businesses, and there's too many to mention, but you start working your way through a lot of the sports enterprises and somehow end up where you are today in Knoxville. Really, I've been to your office, and I'm not even sure I know that much. I mean, we spent most of the time sitting there talking about Burt Reynolds and one of the last movies he did, which you produced. But you have your hand in countless enterprises. I would like to talk about that for a second, including something that we've been involved with a very well-known sports marketing firm, Bespoke, with our mutual friend Mike Boykin, that has done a lot of amazing things, including the Duke's Mayo Bowl. So how did all this happen?
You know, it was, I jokingly say to people that my mom said I could do anything and I believed her. And so, you know, when I left Oklahoma State, I went into more of a traditional business. An Oklahoma State graduate made me an offer, and I went into the commercial floor covering business, which I loved for 12 years. And we had a good run for 6 years each at two different companies. The last five, I was CEO of a pretty big company and really enjoyed it. But I went through a lot of personal changes in my life. And I always wanted to be back in sports and business. So around 2000, I decided I would be more entrepreneurial, wanted to be more of a dad. And I was blending family at the time. I'd gotten remarried and just wanted to be where I could see, you know my kids and see them and travel and just be with family. So we started a small rodeo and kind of NASCAR type sports marketing company called United States Cowboy, which still exists today. And my wife and I just sort of, we ran that business together. Along those, I you know, strangely put on some of the first rodeos ever at a NASCAR race during that time. And that's really where I met a lot of the folks that you and I know together through the NASCAR game. And that's where I met Boykin and Bush and those guys. And shortly after that, you know, my career sort of took me into the sports marketing field where I ran host communications. You know, so I worked with almost every SEC partner and as their rights holder and many others. And then I tried to buy that company at one point, couldn't, and I bought a company called Action Sports Media from Paul Allen, who co-founded Microsoft, former owner of the Seahawks, and it was we owned and operated Jumbotrons in all the biggest college football stadiums, so it was a lot of the same type of business. We sold media rights and, you know, advertising and all of that in these college stadiums, and so that sort of led me to investing more, and we sold that company to Learfield and ISP in a joint venture. And of course, as you know, they all kind of merged. And then as we started investing, Mike Boykin and Greg Bush, to get on your subject there, Bespoke, they called me one day and said they were thinking about doing their own thing. And I said, look, don't make another call. I'll invest and I'll put the whole thing together. And we did that about 8 years ago, and they've built, as you know, a fantastic business.
Which brings us to the business that we're in here, and that's primarily college sports. And there are so many critics these days. And every time I run into you, I saw you recently, we keep saying we've got to figure out a way to talk about this with your expertise. And I'm so glad that we've gotten to that point, Gordon. So help us understand, knowing everyone in the industry, having been on both sides of it, it's a broad question, but it's an important one in terms of where are we right now and what does the future look like?
Well, it's a mess, to be frank. And it's really, I won't say, well, I do have some opinion on how we got here, but I would say as we are today, you know, there are a series of things that happened. One is we, and I was, because I was in it too, we stuck our head in the sand for 40 years over compensating players. And it didn't take me 2 seconds, you know, when I was in college football to get the concept that, you know, in the 50s and 60s, they had a thing called laundry money where college players got, you know, money to quote unquote do their laundry, take their girlfriend out on a date, whatever. And, you know, it wasn't a ton of money, but they could function. By the time I got to Oklahoma State, there was a staunch, like, no money, zero, nothing. Yeah, you can work a summer job, but, you know, once that changed and we started making them players be on campus all summer, then, you know, there's no money. And how are they going to take – and then you throw them in the middle of, you know, BMW world, you know, at these universities where kids are affluent and some of these kids aren't. And so what do you think is going to happen when an overzealous, you know, alumni shows up with a handshake with a, you know, a dollar amount in it? I mean, it's just the whole system was set up for failure for so long and we ignored it. And
Gordon, let me ask you to pause right there because we don't have time before the break to figure out what happens next. And I want to get to that because it's so, so important. Gordon Whitener with us. We've told his story. Now he's going to solve the problems that we've been talking about here. We'll be right back.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back with Gordon Whitener, the former athlete turned coach turned entrepreneur. And Gordon, thank you for continuing with us. We do want to get to the current state of intercollegiate athletics with NIL, the portal. So many things are going on, and there's so much teeth gnashing. So help us understand how this sport moves forward, the sport that we all love and are deeply worried about.
Well, I'll start with, I mean, the ultimate solution, this works, you know, for most everything, is leadership matters. With governance and who leads this industry going forward is going to be paramount. It's tricky right now because you've got a change at the top of the NCAA. You've got conference realignment is all over the place. I literally, you know, would imagine there could be an announcement any day on changes in conference realignment. So sooner than later, the presidents probably need to get together and figure out what governance is going to look like. Are we going to have a governing body like the NCAA, or, you know, are the conference commissioners going to, you know, sort of govern themselves almost like, you know, pro owners do, and have an executive director? I mean, there are a number of ways to manage this, but sooner than later, we need to get to it, because until then, it's going to be, you know, pretty topsy-turvy.
Gordon, I realize you know a lot of the, if not all these people, and, you know, they're all bright, they're all accomplished, but you wonder, sitting on the sidelines like I do, like, what were they thinking, which no longer matters, but, you know, what is their best path based on your vast experience?
If I were king for a day, I would pick some czar over college sports, and with, you know, that would report to the conference, you know, commissioners, and you know, work it that way, because that's who has the power today, the conference commissioners. I'm, as you know, I'm a huge fan of Greg Sankey and what he's done. I think Brett Yormark's off to a tremendous start in the Big 12. I think, you know, the Big 10 has such a powerful presence in America from a television standpoint and just population, that, you know, they're a powerhouse. And then, you know, and then I think there's some, you know, some opportunities. You know, the ACC has opportunities to do some things. The Pac-12 certainly looks like it has some challenges, but that challenges present opportunities. So I would, if it were me, I would lean on the conferences, and I'd probably, you know, I'd hire a czar of football and a czar of basketball and work it that way. But that's just, you know, that's just me.
So, I wonder about this, and I know that COVID is not the best example, but it's the most recent in terms of an existential crisis facing our sport, and it turned out to be a mess for a while trying to see five smart people work together. It didn't work. So my question is, assuming that they did listen to you, and I hope they do, what would that meeting be like to pick the czar of college football?
Oh, it'd be a battle, because you've got – you know, turfed them. I mean, it would be crazy. But let me say this about what you said before I get to that. You know, I kind of want to say hug your athletic director, you know, because what they've had to face with COVID and now NIL and transfer portal, any one of these was, you know, an unbelievable disruptor to college athletics. All of them together has been wild. So kudos to not only the commissioners, but every athletic director and their staffs, just to what they've had to put up with and go through. No one could have ever imagined all of this happening at once. And so I know, you know, people get on your show and others and get angry and name calling and all kind of things. But these folks have really operated in some unbelievable waters. So back to your question, I believe there are plenty of people that could serve in these roles. I do think, you know, that, and we have an open position. Obviously, you got the Big Ten's got an open commissioner's job, and so once that's there's some stabilization, which I think hopefully comes next month, let's say, that, you know, that would be. I mean, look, they're already talking together all the time about issues. This is not, you know, new. I have to believe that they could come up with some kind of, you know, model to do this. I'd hate to get the government involved. I think it's a challenge. But, you know, it's looking more and more like pro sports. And so you're going to have, I mean, this NIL thing, for instance, Paul, is just so all over the board. As you mentioned, like Bespoke is involved in NIL, all the biggest agencies that you know, WME, IMG, CAA, Wasserman, all these people are involved. And then you have these individual collectives at the universities. You've got some universities, you know, that would like to do it themselves. So we've got to get to some type of stabilization. And otherwise, it's just going to be the wild, wild west forever. And I'm a fan of, you know, everybody, you know, at least having a shot, doing well. And that's one of the beauties even of this basketball tournament is that people have a chance, and I want people to have a chance. And for that, we do need some guidelines.
Finally, Gordon, I'm curious about the coaching aspect of it, because you know so many coaches, and they're you're friends with them, and you know things that most of us would die for. What impact and effect? You mentioned the athletic directors, but what is going to happen after a couple of years of this to coaches? Now, I know they're all making large sums of money, but you see some heading for the hills pretty quickly.
It shows you how smart I was getting out of it, you know, and what these guys make today. Not that I could have risen to that, but I will tell you that their jobs are very difficult. But I also want to point out that, you know, there's a lot of people that watch your show because, you know, you've got such a great following that work in, you know, jobs every day. And, you know, in life, there are transfer portals there every day. What I tried to do, and hopefully sometimes successfully when I ran things at certain companies, was I wanted to create the kind of place that when the alarm clock went off, people wanted to go to work. And I also wanted to create the kind of place that when, you know, that they could look over at us and say, they got something going on there. I want to be part of that. Well, that's what, you know, college sports is today. It's your job as a coach, as a department, to keep the players that you brought in, if you want them to stay. I mean, your job is to work with them, develop them, make them feel like, you know, when it's time to be there, they want to be there. Conversely, same. It's kind of like recruiting. Same in business. You know, you've got to create the kind of place that people want to show up to. They, you know, and that starts with fan base, facilities, all the things that you guys talk about all the time. It's the same things that many of your viewers deal with every day in business. It's just, you know, in college football, it's wild and woolly right now, and basketball. I mean, that's the way it's going to be.
Finally, Gordon, I mean, you were part of you were there with Coach Majors, who's one of the old school coaches. A lot of people of your generation and even younger feel this disconnect. They understood what happened back in the day, but there is a resistance and a reluctance to embrace what players are doing and making today. As a fan, and you are a fan of the sport, is this something to be concerned about? Do you think winning cures all, or do you see, even though college sports is doing so well, eventually people saying, you know what, this is not what I signed up for?
Well, one of the things you said, college sports is doing well, we need not lose sight of that. We have a great thing, and we need to nurture it and pay attention to that. So we don't want to lose that. But I understand, and look, I struggle with it as well, but I've been in, you know, outside of athletics long enough in business that this is just, look, stuff happens and changes in the business world all the time. You just got to adapt. You can't sit around and say, can they do that? Of course they can do that. You just got to go, you got to attack it. And, you know, that's one of the things, you know, I mentioned Kevin Steele. One of the great things about Kevin over time is he's had the ability to sort of change and adapt to whatever has come at him in the field. And that's why he's still, you know, doing well after all these years. Most of the older guys, I mean, if they spent any time in pro football, then you sort of get it, because in pro football, you know, for the longest time, quarterbacks were, you know, the ones making all the money. Now you got offense, you know, left tackles making huge money and defensive tackles making huge money. And now running backs don't make as much money as they once did. So, it kind of takes care of itself once it normalizes. Our problem right now is we're in the craziness phase of there is no normalization. So you've got some of these just outlandish numbers that you hear that players are getting paid who've never played a down, and that's where it rubs people the wrong way. But I would say, look, we got a great thing, embrace it, roll with it, learn how to deal with it, and once and for all, we got to get leadership in a hurry, or it will be a mess.
Fantastic conversation. We'll leave it there with Gordon Whitener, and we'll pick it back up in due time. We always enjoy this. Gordon, be well. Can't wait to see you soon, and thanks for making time for us.
Appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Wow, what an amazing conversation and career. What he said at the end is so important, and we'll pick up on that in the coming days, and we'll get to your phone calls right after this.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
There's another pro day this week, bright and early, depending on where you live. Thursday, 10 a.m. Eastern. It's the Anthony Richardson Show. Tony is up next in Nashville. Hello, Tony. Good afternoon.
Hello, Paul. Paul, first-time caller, long-time listener, and
thank
a long-time fan of yours.
Well, thank you very much.
I used to call myself a Vanderbilt War Eagle because I had my in-laws were from Central Alabama and was tied into the coaches on the coach program with the cars with Coach Joe Chimpy would drive father-in-law's car that he was provided there.
He was a great
and,
coach.
But I always followed your article in the Birmingham News. And I always thought when you wrote one article that in the Post-Herald, Skrzypinski would write just the opposite. What do you know whatever happened to Skrzypinski?
Yeah, he's still around. I know Kevin very well. He doesn't write much. He left the newspaper business a couple of years ago, and he's still involved in it. On the periphery, he writes one or two columns a week, but he's still around though.
That's great, Paul. You used to do a segment before the Paul Feinbaum Show on the network. You used to do the best 10 ever. Would you ever think about bringing that program back on the SEC network or something?
I'm going to
hang up
about. Yeah, what you're talking about
great.
Is
and it's
yeah.
A,
I'm trying to remember who I did that for. It was before I came here. It was for I think College Sports Southeast, one of those cable channels that used to.
It
do
was
a lot
awesome.
Of, yeah, we did it. It was fascinating. Long story short, and you're right. I wish I had them right now. We did about 10 different episodes of like the 10 best coaches, 10 best quarterbacks, 10 best this, 10 best in the SEC. And it was done. I didn't choose the selections, but I basically just hosted the show. We did about 10 or 15. I can't remember how many we did. I'm not sure I've ever seen one, but obviously you have. But I will
I
see what I can
do. I watched just about all of them. It was really a good piece,
okay.
And it was really put together well, and it was always good to hear you
I'll tell you a funny story about that,
it.
Tony. We taped it. It was about 10 years ago, maybe 11 or 12 years ago. And we were doing the best defenses of all time in the SEC. And, I mean, they wrote it out for me. I just basically, you know, showed up. And finally, I stopped. I said, I can't do this. He said, why not? I said, because the Tennessee, I think it was the 38-39 defense under General Neyland. He said, well, I said, they didn't give up a point the entire season. I can't. He said, I said, why is that not in here? He said, well, we don't have any video of it. I said, okay. I mean, that was the answer for not including the best defense in SEC history in the list of the 10 best. But I will see if I can find those, and maybe we can
That would be great if y'all could put a piece and put something together, and I think everybody would enjoy them. I really do.
Well,
Paul,
thank you
for taking my call, and like I say, I'm really been following you a long time, but I thought I'd call the show today.
Tony, thanks for remembering my former career. There are not many out there that still do. Thank you very, very much. Let's check in with Bob, who is in California. Hello, Bob.
Hey, Paul. Great to talk to you. I've been a longtime listener as well. And I can tell you, before I launch into the reason for my call, I just want to say thank you for the last 3 years. You know, I got a little sick 3 years ago. I lost my colon and had to get a bag, and I lived with a bag for 3 years. And all during that period, you know, you become a little bit of a hermit, you know, when you got a bag. And
I can imagine.
Got it removed. I got reversed.
Did you really?
2 weeks ago, so I'm out freewheeling again.
That is amazing.
California on the coast.
I've had friends who have gone through that, and Bob, I applaud you for hanging in there. That is one of the toughest things to deal with.
It is just so lame. But anyway, I'm fully healthy. Everything's good. But hey, one of the things that always I can't really get to the bottom of is your dislikeness of the Seminoles. And I understand one of the things you always go back to is, the 1990s when Bobby had a chance to join the ACC or the SEC. And I hear that, and I always think, you know, things were different in 1992. I mean, the SEC was not the SEC that it is today. And, you know, at that time, it was Miami, Florida State, and Florida were, like, the top five programs. And, you know, Bobby was playing those two teams every year. So moving to the SEC wouldn't have been, you know, as difficult as I think maybe someone like yourself, if you could go back in time, make it out to be.
Well, Bob, first of all, I don't want to act like you're completely off base, because I've had some difficulties with FSU over the years, but I don't anymore. I will make it clear. I like Mike Norvell very much. I saw him where did we see him last year when we were in Vegas? Had a nice long chat with him, an interview, and I've spoken to him since. And so probably my biggest issue with FSU wasn't really it was with Bowden for doing that, but my biggest problem was with Jimbo, frankly, during the Jameis Winston story. So, but I'm over that.
Well, I mean, do you think that has something to do with Jimbo moving to the SEC? Because I remember that, and then all of a sudden he moved to the SEC, and then all of a sudden he became kind of a lover of Jimbo there for a little while.
Well, that always happens when a coach goes to the SEC, Bob. You should know that. Bob, I think Jimbo left FSU because he had simply run out of gas there, and he could see the walls crumbling. And I think that's an age-old debate that I'll leave to FSU people. Really, who caused the decline? How much of it should be put on Jimbo, and how much of it should be put on a couple of really bad selections as head football coach?
Well, okay, so having said all that, I guess I just want to end it like with what your thoughts are on the team. I you know, your earlier guest talking about the portal and NIL, I thought to myself, well, as I was listening to him, this is what made me want to call you originally, and that was, I think FSU is actually the poster child for this current period of time, for actually taking advantage of the NIL and the portal, because the team they have assembled there in Tallahassee, at least for this calendar year, looks to be pretty dominant. And if we can get those 10, 11 wins again, I think we're going to be right back in the top five discussion year in and year out, especially with the way Norvell runs the ship. So,
Bob,
I
agree.
I guess I'd like to get your thoughts on
I really do believe. Thanks for the call, and I'm really so glad to hear your health is better. That's quite a turnaround. I think FSU is a legitimate contender this year. I know some people are thinking maybe we're a little bit ahead of our skis, but I think they are. I think they're right outside the top four. We'll take a break. It's been a busy show. Some fantastic guests with Gordon there a minute ago, and so many other important guests. Tannenbaum earlier. We had a great start to the show on a topic on NIL, and we're coming right back.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and Johnny B is up next. Hello, Johnny.
Hey, Paul. Thank you for taking my call. The last guy talking about the state of the SEC in the 90s kind of leads to my point. And the Gordon that called in, you know, he seemed to be a very intelligent guy, but it looks to me like he's spot on with needing a commissioner and a league with a name. And I think Greg Sankey, based upon if you look at what he's done with SEC, would be a perfect man for that job. What do you think?
Well, he's certainly the most qualified. Personally, I'd hate to see him be in charge of everything because that means he wouldn't be at the SEC. But I think
that would be the worst part of it.
But he would have our interest. I don't know. To me, the issue, I think, is getting all these people to agree on somebody. I know that sounds crazy, but the fiefdoms are critical. This would be like getting the, back in the day, the five families of New York to get together at the back of a restaurant and say, okay, one of you guys is going to be the godfather. I mean, you'd end up with all kinds of histrionics.
Yeah. One other thing I was going to touch on is I don't think that the NCAA will exist very much longer. I think part of this growth process will be it'll be gone. It's kind of a joke now as it is. And then the other thing is I don't think Congress needs to be involved at all.
You know what? You just nailed it. That's what needs to, the NCAA needs to go. And nobody really wants in the industry wants to say that because it still has a purpose, but It's such a limited purpose, and I think the bureaucracy of the NCAA is what gets in the way. And right now, essentially, you have two power conferences that mean more than anything else, and then you have a couple of other conferences that are fighting for survival, the Big 12 probably being next. And I can't tell you where the ACC is right now. I mean, they are a conference in transition. And then the Pac-12 is holding up the rear. And I know that diminishes all the other conferences, but that's really where the action is, especially in football.
Yeah. When you're gathering advertising dollar, you got to have a product, and they can't spread it that thin. They're going to have to blend into, like, two super conferences. It's going to be a big job, but, you know, like we were saying, the NCAA has failed miserably, and that guy's obviously a smart businessman, and what he brought up were some great points, and I was just going to throw my part in for Sankey. Like I said, I'd hate to lose him, but I think he would be a great man at the job.
Well said. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate it. I'll say one more thing. Everybody talks about this new guy at the NCAA. I mean, he's a politician. All he's going to do is schmooze other politicians. He's better than the last guy who wasn't anything except an overpaid academician. But Congress is not going to solve college sports' problems. They're only going to make it more complicated. Carl is up next. Hello, Carl. Go right ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, Paul.
Thank you.
I heard Tannenbaum talking about Bryce Young in the NFL and being a pocket passer. That concerned me. Even though I'm a Georgia fan, I don't want anything like Bryce Young to get killed or anything trying to be a pocket passer in the NFL. And I had a question for you. I want to know your thoughts on Mike White as a basketball coach at Georgia. He seems to be a real smart basketball coach to me, and I'll hang up and listen. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked me. I happen to think highly of Mike White. I thought that was a really good move by him and for Georgia. I mean, his time was just starting to sputter and run out at Florida. He did a good job there. But it was time to go. And I think he'll have Georgia back. Thank you for the call. JB is up next.
Hello?
Hello, JB. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Paul.
Hey there.
Mr. How are you doing today, sir?
We're doing great. Thank you.
First-time caller. I'm only 14.
That's a great age, by the way.
Mr. Paul, I'm a longtime Tennessee fan, and I know how he's like been. How we were really good last year. I was wondering what do you think Tennessee needs to do to get us back on track? Because we haven't been doing too hot. We lost three zip to Missouri in that series.
Yeah, that's been a big disappointment. The only thing I'll say in consolation is it's still March. There's plenty of time to turn it around,
sir.
And I think they will. Thank you for the call. We are officially out of time for this program. We appreciate all of you for being a part of it. Some really interesting guests today. We'll see you right here tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.